Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome
worth singing.
I do too.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Welcome to another very exciting show of an edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and today's date is 6/28/2018, and we're broadcasting live from your nation's capital over the format of Blog Talk Radio. We are streaming on all forms of social media: Facebook, Link, Twitter, Instagram, and as our young Z and millennial population can say, whatever. But I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and those who join us on a regular basis, you know you can join us in this conversation and on this platform, Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact, by dialing 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number, let me slow it down, is 646-668-2948. And please remember to dial 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. Now, we have a very, very, very exciting show for you today, but you know, if you follow us on this program, you know that this program is brought to you on a weekly basis by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, which is a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation companies. To address the high effects of energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize Black-owned farmlands, HBCU campuses, to develop initiatives for capacity for solar installation projects to bring down the unemployment and underemployment of young African-American millennials and Z populations that are currently now in our workforce. Also, to educate the Black community locally and nationally about the impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the Black community through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. This show is also brought to you by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. And you can get more information on that initiative by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. Also, this show is brought to you every week by Scotton Communications Network, specializing in the following areas: public relations, writing, editing, web development, web editing, newspaper production online and traditional, newspaper production online and traditional, speech writing, book writing, editing and publishing, Speaker Bureau Management, and for contact information, you can contact ScottandCommunicationsNetwork.com. That's ScottandCommunicationsNetwork.com, and that contact person is Dr. Gwendolyn Scott and Bethay. Now, as we switch gears and look at our talk show, topic for our show today is one that I think that you will find of extreme interest if you live in the Maryland DMV market area and you receive a Pepco bill, okay? How important is electric vehicle infrastructure charges to the growth of sales for electric vehicles in the DMV marketplace? Okay, looking at what is presently going on, I recently had the pleasure of attending a workshop 3, which was put on by the Pepco here in our nation's capital, here in Washington, D.C. And in looking at the rollout of this proposal, Pepco is planning to spend $15,419,650. This is the proposal that will be going to the Public Service Commission here in Washington, D.C. for a decision on whether this new proposal that Pepco is putting out for infrastructure will be approved by the Public Service Commission, and then I guess it will be reviewed by the People's Council here in Washington, D.C., because that is their responsibility. And we're going to be talking about this some more as we go deeper into this issue on this rollout of the infrastructure. Now, the state of Maryland is preparing to spend over the next 3 years, $3,600,000 for infrastructure for electric vehicle charging stations. The state of California, the state of New York, and New Jersey, they're going to be spending $1.3 billion. I didn't say million, I said billion with the B. So we're talking about an awful lot of money. The issue and the question always become, who's going to pay for this? Now, it's very, very interesting. I have reached out to the Oarsman Chevrolet of Rockville, Maryland, and we hope that we will be joined by Mr. Bruce Jones, their sales manager at OCR, which stands for Oarsman Chevrolet of Rockville, to discuss this issue. Because it seems to me if ratepayers are going to have to pay for this infrastructure through fees that will be attached to their electric bills as consumers of electricity, that there should be some type of way to make electric vehicles more affordable for low and moderate income residents of the District of Columbia and the state of Maryland. Now, as we began to look at how things have played out in this area, very few of our people are aware of the fact that President Obama's administration put in place a federal, it's called an ITC, a Federal Investment Tax Credit, of $7,500 if you are going to purchase an electric vehicle, but it must be a new electric vehicle. The problem I see with that is when you begin to look at communities of color around this country, and specifically the African-American community, and when you begin to examine, if you know anything about the car automobile industry, which I had the privilege of being a sales rep for almost 8 years, many years ago, but as we say, if you've ridden a bicycle, if you ever learn how to ride a bicycle, you never forget. But I also reached out to and spoke with Mr. Osmond Jr., who is vice president of the general manager for Robert Osmond Chevrolet of Rockville. And if you have been living in the DMV market area for any time at all, you know that Osmond Chevrolet has been one of the top dealerships for years in this market area. Not that I'm running an advertisement for Osmond today, but I felt as though I needed to reach out to get some information. And that information looks at what is going in the U.S. marketplace, because in Scandinavia, an environmental conscious Scandinavia, it's hard to sell electric vehicles. That is part due to the people selling them. Dealerships and sales personnel pose significant barriers for electric vehicle uptake, states a study published by a journal of Nature. Dealers have little to no initiative to properly sell electric vehicles, even in the Nordic regions. So a study vastly committed to the decarbonization of transport, a country study that was done by a Danish university researcher sent out undercover 82 visitors to car dealerships in Denmark, Finland, Iceland, Norway, and Sweden. Buyers were asked to remain neutral with no initial inclination to any type of vehicle. Over the course of the 126 car shopping encounters, the researchers quantified sellers' interactions with the buyers. They found that salespeople tended to systematically misinform shoppers about EVs, if not mislead or ignore EVs entirely, 77% of the time, the majority of the cases that EVs were mentioned, most steered bias toward gasoline and diesel vehicles. Car dealers are erecting barriers to electric car buyers. The dismissing of EVs in 28 cases, misinformed customers in 24 cases, neglect to mention EVs in 22 cases, depict EVs as inferior in 14 cases, EVs unavailable or out of sight, 12 cases, claim electric capabilities were not useful, 12 cases. Misled on tax benefits, 11 cases. Claim economics unfavorable for EVs, 11 cases. Lack of models offered, 10 cases. Partly, it was unfortunate that the researchers recorded conversations that found many staff lack knowledge of electric vehicles technologies, but deliberately misled with a riff. Do not buy this EV. It will ruin you. It will ruin you financially, said one quote from a salesperson. We have this electric vehicle, but only goes about 80 miles per charge. Now, all this is false information. So when I found this information, I said, well, let me reach out to a dealership here in the DMV market area, which we did, and we're still awaiting the call. hopefully we will be joined by Mr. Bruce Jones, sales manager for OCR. But if not, of course, we will definitely drill down on this issue. And the reason why we're drilling down on this issue, because as I indicated at the top of this show, Pepco is sending to the Public Service Commission a proposal which the Public Service Commission has to render a decision on to spend $15,419,650 for EV infrastructure. But today's date, with the Department of Motor Vehicles, you have a total of 674 electric vehicles registered in the District of Columbia with DMV of DC resident on electric vehicles. Now, when you begin to look at that phenomenon, and you look at the fact that if you divided that figure into this number of 15,400,000, you'd be talking about $22,000 for each vehicle we got registered in the district. There has to be a way for electric vehicles, more electric vehicles, to be incentives to be put in place other than just talking about the benefits of electric vehicles to the environment. Sure, we know that carbon monoxide and all of the other toxins that spew out of exhaust pipes impact on health. I beat the drum around this numerous times. But when we begin to talk about the impact studies, physical impacts, economic impacts, net benefits, there was always a study being done. This particular study was put out by Global Associates. The study scope impacts on proposed Pepco DCEV programs forecast the production. Now, you get a whole lot of charts and graphs, and the bottom line is, what does the brother or sister catching the bus coming out of Anacostia that may not even have a car, but they have an electric bill because they pay utilities in the District of Columbia? Or that senior citizen who doesn't even drive, but she has an electric bill in her apartment because utilities are not included in her rent. Everybody will pay in some form or fashion for this infrastructure. We're talking about infrastructure. When we look at infrastructure, we're talking about the creation of opportunities, business opportunities. I did an earlier show, and we talked about that. But the thing I wanted to talk about today, that is why I invited a representative on from one of the area dealerships. I wanted to get input from the automobile dealers in the DMV market area to serve as a litmus test of how important this is to them in generating sales. Evidently, it's not important enough because I have not been joined. This was passed on. I spoke directly to Mr. Robert B. Orsman Jr., Vice President, General Manager of Orsman Chevrolet. He said it was important and that he would pass this on to Mr. Bruce Jones. Well, I have, in fact, I won't throw Mr. Jones up under the bus because maybe the information wasn't passed on to him. But this is what I sent to them. Would your company support a $10,000 State of Maryland and the District of Columbia City investment tax credit legislation to help low and moderate income families purchase new EVs. Now, this was tried in the state of Georgia. The state of Georgia passed a $5,000 state ITC, investment tax credit, where you, in fact, could, if you purchase a new electric vehicle, could get use the $7,500 federal tax credit with the $5,000 state tax credit, totaling $12,500. It propelled sales in the electric vehicle market in the state of Georgia, number two in the nation behind the state of California. What happened was when the oil companies, gas companies got wind of this issue, state tax credit, and the large surge in orders of electric vehicles in the state of Georgia, they brought their lobbyists in. They went into Athens, and they must have brought every politician in Athens, Georgia, in the state legislature. They withdrew the $5,000 investment tax credit for residents of the state of Georgia, as well as turn around and put a $200 tax on any person who had tags for an electric vehicle in the state of Georgia, whether it was new or used. I had the privilege of interviewing Orlando Baylor, who is happens to be a relative by marriage, on this air platform, African-American brother who attended Howard University, who in fact is in, works in the engineering area. And Orlando has purchased a used electric vehicle to go back and forth to work. Now, what he indicated to me was you could not use the federal tax credit, which is true for unused vehicles, nor could you use that state tax credit for unused vehicles. But when we began to talk about the car industry and the importance of used cars to the new car dealer, that is why we wanted Mr. Bruce Jones to come in to talk about what percentage of sales is and income on a monthly basis is generated by the used car division for Orsman. This is why you reach out to people and give them an opportunity to come on and share information to our listening audience. After all, this show is called Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Believe me, this electric vehicle infrastructure will have an economic impact on your pocketbook. Now, we realize that the District of Columbia, the Hotel Association, who is going to have something to say about that, and they're one of the most powerful entities in Washington, D.C., as well as the Washington Area Automobile Dealers Association. We reached out to someone from there to get some comments or input before we came on the airways this morning. We weren't able to gather anybody. Everybody in this industry, they are busy. We understand that. But who in the hell is going to benefit from the sale of electric vehicles more than the manufacturers and the dealerships? We keep talking about the benefit For the environment, I get that. We understand the effects of climate change disproportionately affects the African American community. Remember the flood called Katrina in the South Ward, Ninth Ward in New Orleans? So we get that. You can go to our website and watch a documentary on that aspect. But today we're drilling down on what is going on in the nation's capital, which is, I call, a test tube baby, because what happens here, it has the tendency to go, spread around the nation. And one thing for sure, this is going to be, as George Sieber says in the video, the great transportation and energy disruption. This is going to change the way people live. What is called driverless technologies and electric vehicles is going to change a whole lot of things. Number one, these vehicles don't have engines. Can we say automobile mechanic? What will they be fixing then? They won't be working on motors anymore because these vehicles don't have engines. You may have to go in to get some front end work with the shape of our highways, but if you're talking about building infrastructure for EVs, how about fixing the streets and the potholes for the gasoline vehicles that's already on the road? And would it be like if one of our politicians from the African American community would in fact bring forth legislation asking for, in the state of Maryland and D.C., for there to be a $10,000 ITC with the federal $7,500 tax credit to be applicable not only on new vehicles, but a percentage of that $10,000 could be used on used vehicles. What would it do to jumpstart getting more electric vehicles in the marketplace? And the reason why this is important is because I had the privilege of hearing the CEO of BMW on Charlie Rose's show several months back. And Charlie Rose asked the CEO of BMW, well, what is keeping electric vehicles out of the marketplace? And the gentleman said very succinctly, EV charging infrastructure is not there, especially on the East Coast. And as I indicated at the beginning of this show, we know California leads the nation in the renewable sector, but New York and Jersey and California combined, their proposed budgets for electric vehicle charges is around $1.3 billion that they're planning to spend in the next 3 years. It seems to me that we need to be talking to our African-American solar installation companies, our investment organizations, money managers of investment funds, to look at how African-American contractors, how do we shine the light on this new industry that's being created by this, what they call a paradigm shift in the transportation industry in this country? Because we're going to go from combustion vehicles to electric vehicles, and it's all going to also go into the trucking industry. How do we benefit other than just being consumers? This is why I reached out to Mr. Bruce Jones, the sales manager. Will the sales representatives of electric vehicles in the United States take the same attitude as the sales representatives and salespeople working in Sweden And will this be a national phenomenon, or is this just isolated to Sweden? Is there pushback in this area? These are all questions I can't answer, but I can damn sure try to get you the answer. That's why we created this program called Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. That's why we attend these meetings, this information, because when you begin to look at the numbers, what skin in the game does the car manufacturers have in helping to pay for the infrastructure, charging infrastructure, and the dealerships in the market areas where these vehicles will roll out? And you can look at every major market in the U.S., and one will not be any bigger than the DMV market area when you look at the number of automobiles in the state of Virginia, Washington, D.C., and Maryland. Then you have to look at the fact that we have our electric highway will end up being I-95 and I-85 going north and south. And if you're going to put that much money into infrastructure for electric vehicles in New York and New Jersey, well, can we say Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, Louisiana, all those southern states that don't have renewable portfolio standards in place? We got to begin to start looking at this issue of how do we, in fact, deal with this issue, because somebody's got to pay for this. Now, I had scheduled Mr. Bruce Jones for 11 to 11:30. It's now 11:31. So it's very clear to me that we will not be joined by Mr. Jones today, because we're getting ready to pause for the calls. We're going to shift gears, and we're going to talk about some other matters as it relates to the issue of water infrastructure issues here in our nation capital. Now, what does that have to do with solar and renewable energy? Well, we look at all forms of energy, and water is what we call now one of the major players in renewables. It's called hydrogenetics. So when we begin to look at infrastructure, if you are not living in the DMV market area, well, of course, this doesn't affect you. But if you live in the District of Columbia, you want to be paying close attention to what I'm getting ready to say. And you want to join us as we pause shortly for the cause here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact.
Life is a song worth singing. I got you. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing. I got you. Sing it.
Welcome welcome back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay. And as you know, this show is brought to you by the Positive Change Purchaser Cooperative, LLC, the Black Sports Legends HBCU Radio Network, and Scott Communications Network. Now, as we were saying right before we took that a short break here in our show, that there is a very, very disturbing issue going on as it relates to, once again, infrastructure here in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. You can log on to our website at positivechangepc.com. Please click on our news and events tab, and you can scroll down and read this information for yourself. Alert, stand with D.C. clergy as residents who are fighting displacement by way of predatory water fees. This was an article put out by an organization called Empower D.C. It was dated May 22, 2018. Did you know that the CRIA, the Clean River Impervious Area Charge, once again, it's called the CRIAC, Clean River Impervious Area Charge fee, has increased 2,000% over the past few years. Now, some churches are being forced to pay $2,000 a month for this fee alone. Let me repeat myself. Some of our churches are being forced to pay $2,000 a month for this fee alone. Cemeteries have been charged as much as, I hope you're not driving, I hope you're sitting down, $19,000 a month. Once again, cemeteries are being charged as much as $19,000 a month. Homeowners are seeing over $60 per month for this fee alone. Failure to pay water bills in the district can cause foreclosure on your property. Many churches and homeowners are at risk. Why is this fee so high? Because D.C. government is failing to pay the bill for this massive $2.7 billion D.C. water infrastructure project, leaving ratepayers to foot the bill. We are seeking $40 million from the city in the D.C. budget to pay down the expenses, leaving less of the burden to be distributed to our ratepayers. Excessive water bills are threatening the homes, churches, seniors, and all others who may be struggling to live in the city. Several clergy disrupted the D.C. Council hearing on May 15 in protest of these fees, and these hearings has been scheduled, and this hearing was scheduled as a result. Now, who knew about this issue that's listening to the sound of my voice? And you can join me by calling 646-668-2948. Once again, you can join us on this platform, Solar Now in the Future, with its economic impact by calling us at 646-668-2948. And once again, please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. Now, this issue, can we say the wharf in Southwest Washington, D.C.? Everybody jump up and talk about, oh, we got, look at the beautiful wharf. Well, look at the infrastructure and the work that went in there. Look at, if you are anywhere near the nation's capital, all you got to do is get near Cadoza High School, stand near their football field, and look around the city, and you can see all of the cranes of all of the new construction going on in every quadrant of our nation's capital. Every time a new building goes up, there is infrastructure costs. So why is it that the developers are not paying their fair share of this bill, and why has it been passed on to low and moderate income residents of the District of Columbia? These are questions for your city council and your mayor. Now, we just had an election, but I didn't hear nobody talking about this as a major campaign issue. Nobody raised this issue. I think it's a disgrace to the human race that these infrastructure fees have been put on the backs of our churches and our ratepayers for DC water. And see, the strange part about this dichotomy is that the Public Service Commission of Washington, D.C. has a Consumer Bill of Rights, but your water is not covered by the Public Service Commission. I think that this needs to be looked at. The District of Columbia Public Service Commission is a regulatory authority over electricity, natural gas, local communication services. Columbia, the commission is composed with three commissioners who are appointed every four terms by the mayor with the advice and consent of the D.C. Council. The original Public Service Commission was appointed by Congress. Here we go. We know that we got to deal with the fact that the district is the last colony. Congress put this commission in place for the Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. But why was water not left, is not under this? So you're dealing directly with the city council and the mayor on this for regulatory oversight, because I don't see where the People's Council comes into play with this. The original CBOR was the first written presentation for consumer protection rules that govern the duties and responsibilities for residential customers and the three electrical, natural gas, and local telephone utility companies. Well, in water utility, why is it not under the purview of the Public Service Commission and the People's Council? It was developed to address provisions of utility service in a traditional and regulated environment. This updated version provides safeguards for consumers who purchase their electricity, natural gas, and telecommunication services in a competitive environment. Well, ain't no competitive environment for the water. And what's happening with this fee is unconscionable. Promotes administrative efficiency, creates uniformity of the requirements and responsibility for utilities, competitive energy and telecommunication service providers for consumers, educates and informs the public regarding their rights and responsibilities in purchasing and providing electricity, natural gas, and local telecommunications in the District of Columbia. Well, I get that. But I don't get why the water is not regulated by the Public Service Commission in Washington, D.C., and given purview to the People's Council, who is their responsibility. Consumers can also contact the Office of the People's Council, an independent agency of the District of Columbia government that is an advocate for ratepayers and consumers of natural gas, electricity, local phone services in the district. What about the water? When we put this format together, it was called Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. So we began to look at energy, but water is a form of energy. When you begin to drill down on infrastructure issues, this electric vehicle infrastructure issue, as well as the infrastructure issue surrounding the Renewable Portfolio Standard Act of 2016, which was signed into law by Mayor Bowser. Under that, the District of Columbia has a shortfall in solar-based facility. The law mandates that 5% of the renewable portfolio standard come from solar, but it must come from the physical confines of the District of Columbia in terms of land mass. I had the privilege of sitting at the Pepco workshops, and I had the privilege of speaking with one of their representatives who has informed me. We have run the numbers. We do not have enough space in the District of Columbia. Pepco has run the numbers. You don't have enough space to build enough solar infrastructure by putting solar panels on roofs and in landmass to meet the 5% mandate, and because of this appliance fee, which is passed on to the consumers, in 2016, D.C. residents spent $15 million more for energy. In 2017, that number doubled to $30 million for lack of solar-based facility in the District of Columbia, with Pepco having to comply with the law. Pepco did not write this legislation. This legislation was written and passed by the mayor and the D.C. City Council, but I'm quite sure Pepco's attorneys and their interests were at the table when this legislation was being, in fact, looked at. Now, the Public Service Commission presently has an initiative called the Manassas, M-E-D-S-I-S, Initiative. And they have hired a company to, in fact, the Public Service Commission of the District of Columbia is pleased to announce the hiring of Smart Electric Power Alliance, a D.C.-based nonprofit organization composed of stakeholders from all across the energy landscape as consultants. Now, what this group is doing is they're trying to get input from the community, from the stakeholders who stand to benefit from this industry. That will be your nonprofit organizations such as D.C. Neighborhoods United, Groundswell, and I saw the EV plug-in D.C. People there at the event yesterday, because I did go to this tech workshop. Because somebody who looks like me and you needs to be getting this information out to our community. As I indicated, in 2015, D.C. residents paid $15 million more for energy because of lack of land-based solar facility. In 2017, it jumped to $30 million. But the D.C. City Council presently has the Renewable Portfolio Standard Act of 2018 in their prayer view that they will be considering this summer. It will probably be passed in August before they go out for the summer. They take a break. This Renewable Portfolio Standards Act will increase the renewable portfolio standard from 50% by year 2032 to 100% by year 2050. The solar mandate jumps from 5% to 17%. Well, hell, PEPCO's already run the numbers. They already know that you can't build enough solar inside the district. But in fact, if you don't allow the energy or extracts to be purchased from outside of the district, if it's restricted to the physical land mass in the district, that means that the extracts market will continue to be one of the highest in the country. Well, people making money off the extracts market in Washington, D.C., but is the black community making any money? No. The reason why most of us could not afford to put PV systems on our home, well, they rolled out the Solar for All program. We're going to talk about that program here on this show, Solar Now and the Future, with its economic impact on Black America. And what I'm going to do, as people can always say, we're going to take a pause for the calls. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the Solar for All program. And
life is a song worth singing. I can sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Welcome back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know that this show is brought to you by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, which is a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation companies to address the economic effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, to utilize black-owned farmlands, HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the under and unemployment rate among our African-American youth, as well as educating the black community on locally and nationally on the economic impacts on climate change and the need for environmental education in both the black community through black talk radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Show is also brought to you by, once again, the HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. You get more information by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com, clicking on our GoFundMe link, and you will find our executive summary there on that particular initiative. And we urge you to take a look, because we do need your support, because we're trying to move this program to the airways of 1450 AM and 95.9 FM on your radio dial, so you'll be able to find us, hear us on Sunday mornings from 10 to 11 if we're able to raise the necessary sponsorship to purchase that airtime. And if you think this information is news that you can definitely use, then you need to do that. This show is also brought to you by Scott and Communications Network, specializing in the following areas: public relations, writing, editing, web development, web editing, magazine production, online and traditional, newspaper production, online and traditional, speech writing, book writing, editing and publishing, speaker bureau management, contact information, scottandcommunicationsnetwork.com. That's scottandcommunicationsnetwork.com, and your contact person is Dr. Gwendolyn Scott the Faith. Now, as we were talking about the Solar for All program in the District of Columbia, we were talking about this program because it was the main catalyst as to how and why the City Council voted on putting into place the program, which was supposed to be there to assist 100,000 D.C. residents who would qualify under the area median income of 80% if you make less than, family of one, $54,250, family of two, $62,000, family of three, $69,750, family of four, $77,450, family of five, $83,650, family of six, $89,850, family of seven, $96,050. Family of eight, $102,250 a year. You would qualify to be able to get a free PV system installed on your home. But in doing so, this program has put out $30 million, which has been funded for this program over the last two fiscal years, fiscal year 16-17 and 17-18, okay, has gone out to grantees. Unfortunately, they didn't put any money in the budget until the second funding cycle for roof repair. That means how much money is in the pipeline right now for the Solar for All program? This program is supposed to assist low and moderate income residents of D.C. get PV systems if you qualify. And you can get more information about that program by logging on to, just one second, we'll give you that information, www.solarunitedneighbors.org, solar.org/solarforall-dc. Once again, that web address is solarunitedneighbors.org/solarforall-dc. Okay, and you can also contact them at their phone number at DC Team Solar United Neighbors.org. 202-888-3601, or you can call directly to the Department of Energy and Environment, and you can go to their website at www.dcdoee.gov. That's www.dcdoee.gov. If that's not correct, it's close. If you Google it, you'll get that information. Now, in the state of Maryland, they have a program called Transitioning Neighborhood Initiative. It's the syllables is TNI. And it's a very similar program as the Solar for All program that they have in the District of Columbia. The program in the District of Columbia, the Solar for All program, was supposed to help reduce 100,000 low and moderate income residents' utility bills by 50% by year 2032. That is how this was put out there, that particular initiative. The initiative in Prince George's County is supposed to help low and moderate income communities, but it's based on a 60% area median income. Now, when you begin to look at the fact that you have to live in zip code 207, first three digits of your zip code in Prince George's County, even to apply, that is a deal breaker. That makes no sense whatsoever. You cannot walk in a neighborhood and look at the homes based on zip code or the conditions of how nice homes may be kept or look or how poorly they are kept or look and determine the amount of income coming in that door by the people who live there. You know, that it makes no sense, especially when you begin to look at who owns homes in the black community. But no, have you ever heard of baby boomers? Well, that's my generation. Most of us have purchased homes. We didn't purchase them yesterday. We purchased them 20, 30, 40 years ago. If you live in the DMV market area, I don't have to talk to you about the issue of the cost of housing. You already know. Pass off the chain. These some of these numbers for this space is absolutely insane. To think people who work on minimum wage in the district cannot afford to live there. Well, can we say gentrification? See, the game has changed, black folks. People don't tell you you can't come in there because of the color of your skin. They just put the price so you can't afford to come in there or stay where you are. But when you begin to start adding on these other important issues, such as water, gas, electricity, and you have people and agencies that have oversight over this that's supposed to be looking at your interests, and when the developers come in and when the industries such as your automobile industry and your car dealership associations, these are powerful, powerful entities. They can hire lobbyists. Well, our communities can't. We don't have the resources. But somebody has to get the word out to our community about what is affecting their bottom line every day. Our people are being bombarded with these additional fees that are attached to essentials of life, utilities, water, gas, electricity. And there's also issues about the communications. But for the purposes of this show, Solar Now in the Future, which is economic impact on black America, I have began to look at this on a national scope. This and these issues are not just isolated to Washington, D.C. They are affecting low and moderate income communities of color across this country, but specifically, disproportionately, they affect the African American community because we, for the last 30 or 40 years, have been the numbers in the cities. And we know there's a shift in that migration for more people who families originally came from the Deep South are being forced to move back to the Deep South. But guess what? When you move, more people you bring in, the more what infrastructure you got to put in place to meet the human demand for utilities. With paradigm shifts in the transportation area, and we're shifting to this electric vehicle and what we call artificial intelligence age, it creates opportunities that in this particular part of this, on this particular show, I did not discuss. because I was trying to get some input for other sources to bring this picture in to make some sense of these numbers. It burns me to the greatest when I look at all of these studies that are being done and contracted out by the PEPCOs of this world, the Public Service Commission of this world. But when I see who gets these contracts and the firms who have these contracts, I don't see a lot of people who look like me and you working for these organizations. We turn out all these economists, we turn out all, but rather than us training our young people to go out in the marketplace, learn what they need to learn, and start their own business, we train our people to go out and beg people for jobs. This renewable energy industry is a paradigm shift in this economy, this transportation, this electric vehicle piece. We need to seize this renewable energy format. We invested too much political capital in, can we say, the 44th President Barack Hussein Obama. A lot of our people feel as though he did not deliver anything specifically for the African-American community. Now we're dealing with the politics again. We just had the midterms. Can I say, if you live in Maryland, and you're registered as an independent, well, what the people said, well, what does that have to do with the topic? It's got a hell of a lot to do with the topic. When I asked my local city council person, why is it if I live in zip code 209 in Prince George's County, 20912, and it's a program that my tax dollars are paying for called the Transition Neighborhood Initiative, and I can't even apply, even if my family, we meet the 60% area median income to be able to qualify for this program. We can't even apply to get a PV system that will help us bring down our utility bill. That's what this show is about, sir. And ladies and gentlemen, and whoever's listening, it's about connecting the dots and making sense of what we use every day, utilities. And we're paying for this stuff. And when these programs come down, the government doesn't put any money in community engagement or public relations to get out of it. Oh, you go to the website. When you begin to raise strategic questions to your politicians, the former councilwoman for my area, Travis, she said, oh, that's the way they did it. Well, what did you do when you were you sitting at the table? But as a registered independent, because I didn't know that there was a 21-day cycle out there saying, okay, you're registered as an independent, you can go to the polls, but you can't vote. Only for a school board member because you didn't change your party affiliation 21 days out from the election. That is absolutely crazy that the Democratic Party in the state of Maryland, who always is running up in black folks' faces wanting us to vote Democratic, ask them about certain things pertinent to your bottom line, they got no answers. I don't return the phone calls. Well, can you please send us a letter, put it in an email, and the secretary don't answer the email or the phone calls. This is the game that is being played on black folks in America. This nonsense has to stop. It has to stop. I had the privilege of talking to Ms. Hollingsworth, who was the former mayor of Hyattsville. She ran against the councilwoman in District 2, Ms. Travis. I went to the polls to vote for her, only to discover I couldn't a day before because I try to stay on top of things, and I had to change my party affiliation 21 days out to be able to vote on a Democratic ticket. You can either go Republican or Democrat. Why is that? It keeps all of the power concentrated with the Democratic and the Republican Party in the state of Maryland. It is insane. Out of 50 states, only 21 states allow independents to vote in their primary elections. All politics are local. You reach out to ask people to come on your show until you blow up and it's in their face and they got a public relation, especially folks who don't look like me who have money and wealth and power. But we pay for the infrastructure to create the wealth for them. That's what this, the beginning of my show was, discussing the issue. How does the infrastructure rollout affect car sales? The more infrastructure you put in place, the more people see that they can charge these vehicles, the more they're likely to purchase one. Nobody's going to buy electric vehicles. They don't know where the hell they're going to get it charged at. Okay? And not just locally, because when you go into urban markets, you're going to have more concentration of infrastructure. Well, who's going to pay for the infrastructure of these charging stations on the highways? It's called, can we say, I-95? Trucks. You have stakeholders in this industry. You got the trucking industry. You got the automobile dealership industry. You got the automobile manufacturing industry. Well, how much skin they got in the game to pay for this infrastructure? See, these are questions that needs to be raised. Do our politicians have the guts in Maryland and the District of Columbia to pass a $10,000 investment tax credit for low and moderate income residents who want to purchase a new vehicle before the $7,500 federal tax credit expires in year 2021? I'm going to continue to beat this drum around this issue. As I said, we were scheduled to have Mr. Bruce Jones, sales manager for Oarsman Chevrolet of Rockville, on our show. Mr. Robert B. Oarsman Jr., the vice president and general sales manager, I guess his father, it was passed down. They have a large brand in this market area. But when people give you an opportunity to come on and talk to those African-American consumers in this DMV market area, I would hope that y'all would take advantage of that and bring information that the community needs to know about these electric vehicles. Are you doing the same thing they're doing in Sweden as car sales representatives at your dealerships? I can't answer that question. I don't know. I know I will reach out again in the future to try to, in fact, bring some sanity to an industry, as I say, to an industry where billions of dollars are being spent by African Americans and we get no return. I have begged Mr. Tracy Roberts of AID, and I guess this is something that they won't do, but they need to do, since they're supposed to be the voice for black in energy. A report in 2009, African Americans spent $41 billion for energy in the United States of America. We only had 1.1% of the jobs across all sectors of energy. It doesn't even make any difference. It was oil, coal, gas, carbon polluting, what we would call old forms of energy versus the new renewable energies, wind turbine, hydrogenetics, solar, and biomass. Fast forward 2015, the Solar Foundation put out a study in 2015 that says African Americans, and I posted it on my website. It's under our archives at positivechangepc.com. That's February of 2017. You can go there and you can find the article. Black Americans, numbers don't lie. We only make up 6.6% of the solar installation industry, and that was based on a statistical data that was put out in 2015 that indicated that you had 23.8% women working in that industry. And I'm going to look at some numbers because I want to make sure that this information that I'm sharing with you is very, very as much accurate as I could can possibly make that information. Because one of the things that we try to do, we try to provide information that people can go and research for themselves. And as we say, you don't have to take our word for it. 2015, women composed 23.8%. Latino and the Hispanic community composed 11.3%. Asians and Pacific Islanders composed 8.6%. U.S. veterans of the U.S. Armed Forces, and this is where I really have a serious problem. They say we compose 8.1%. Well, hell, African Americans, we both genders. We join the military at higher rates because of lack of opportunity coming out of high school. But we were supposed to be representing 6.6% in 2015. And actually, these numbers came out in 17. In 15, it was 5.0% of the workforce. When you begin to look at other numbers, data, when you start drilling down and looking at the number of solar installation companies, out of 9,929 companies, based on this old data from 2017, the last report that the Solar Foundation put out, you only had 15. I've only been able to verify close to 15 African-American solar installation companies out of 9,929 companies doing business in the whole United States of America. Four that are registered inside with D.C. government and one in the state of Maryland, Biff Energy. And I can name those off the top of my head. I've located two in the state of Georgia. And one of those companies in Georgia was started by Mr. Mark Davis, who started DC Solar here in DC, the first African American to start a solar installation company around 2009. He started it in Southeast Washington, DC, but he hails from Georgia, so he put a branch in Atlanta, office in Atlanta. I had the other gentleman on from Solar Choice USA, African-American brother, on this show less than a month ago. These numbers are absolutely, they're past embarrassing. For all of the black contracting organizations out there, and looking at the amount of monies that are going to be spent in the electric vehicle infrastructure industry, our contractors and our business people need to be refocusing their energy on this, as well as roofing companies. in the District of Columbia. I've reached out. I haven't been able to reach, but locate, but one African American roofing company. Well, hell, before you can put a PV system on a roof, you got to make sure the roof is in good shape. Anybody would, it's just common sense. You look at the age of the housing stock in our communities from 50 to 100 years old, you got to fix the roofs on these houses. But no, that's not what how this program, SolarForAll, was rolled out. They rolled the program out, and then they thought about fixing the roofs after they got the program out there. So I'm not going to throw Tommy Wells, the chair director of the Department of DOEE, under the bus, because the city council should have been thinking about that, and the mayor. But, of course, you know, they got bigger fish to fry. You know, that's why when I reached out for Ms. LaToya Foster to invite the mayor on this platform, she couldn't get back to me. But we're going to keep pushing and grinding these issues because we know that we think that we have brought to you news that you can definitely use. Now, we're getting ready to wind this program down because this broadcast is taking place on a Thursday, and normally we broadcast on Wednesday. But we took time yesterday to go down to the Public Service Commission and get some other information, which we shared with you earlier in the show. And we're going to keep beating this drum because it's necessary. There's not another program similar or near Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America on the airways. And we're coming to you on the airways of Blog Talk Radio from our nation's capital. We are streaming over Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, and as the Z population says, and whatever. So you can hear this show every week if you log on to positivechangepc.com. You can listen over your Android smart device, and we're now on our speakers platform through Blog Talk, so you can get us to Alexis. So please, please pass the word about Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And as we say, you can log on to our website. You can check out our new GoFundMe link. Always take time to look at our database under our news and talk, news and events section, because we do a tremendous amount of research to put updated articles in our database to inform our community on what they need to know about what's going to affect them in their in the Black community around the energy industry and all areas of utilities that affect our bottom line. Can we say water bill, gas bill, and electric bill every month, just like the rent and the mortgage? It's due of the month. So as we say, we hope that we brought you news that you can definitely use. And as we close, we always like to acknowledge those folk that bring this show to you every week, which is the Positive Change Purchase Again LLC. And as we said, it serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for solar and renewable energies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation companies to address the high energy costs at our historically Black colleges, to utilize Black-owned farmlands and Black HBCU campuses to develop solar installation initiatives to bring down the unemployment rate among our young Z and millennial population, and to educate the Black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts on climate change and the need for environmental education in the Black community through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America, the BSL HBCU Solar Talk Show Radio Initiative, and Skyden Communications, specializing in the following areas: public relations, writing, editing, web development, web editing, magazine production online, and traditional newspaper production online, and traditional speech writing, book writing, editing and publishing, speaker bureau management. Contact ScottandCommunicationsNetwork.com. That's ScottandCommunicationsNetwork.com. Contact person is Dr. Gwendolyn. As we closed out our edition of our 2006-28-18 show, we hope that we brought news that you definitely can use on this platform.
Life is a song worth singing. I can tell. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing. I got you. Sing it.